The following is a production of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. For more information about the seminary, how you can support it, or applying to become a student, please visit www.gpts.edu. Hello and welcome to another edition of Confessing Our Hope, the podcast of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. My name is Zach Groff, and I'm the host of the podcast, as well as a student here at the seminary. And I have with me in the studio Caleb Cangelosi, associate pastor at Pear Orchard PCA in Ridgeland, Mississippi, and founder and owner of the Log College Press. Caleb, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Zach. It's great to be with you.
Today, we are going to be discussing his what I call labor of love, the Log College Press, and the work that the press is doing to retrieve and republish material from the past, specifically from American Presbyterian history, but also other outside of American traditions to some degree, and to really promote the work, because it's near and dear to the heart of Greenville Seminary and our friends. And in case you haven't heard of it yet, or if you don't know much about the work of Log College Press, I really want you to learn about it and to benefit from this labor of love that Caleb and a few of his friends and associates have been working at and making available to us. Caleb, to kick off our conversation here, can you answer this question? What is Log College Press?
So Log College Press is both a website and a publishing company. The goal is to collect and to reprint as many of the writings of and about 18th and 19th century American Presbyterians as possible, probably with the emphasis there on collect. We currently have about 2,900 different titles from over 500 American Presbyterians on the website, arranged by author. And we have reprinted seven titles, six booklets and a book by 18th and 19th century American Presbyterians. So we are desirous to sort of do what the PRDL, the Post-Reformation Digital Library, did for that genre, that time period in history, gathering, collecting the works of American Presbyterianism in one place, kind of a one-stop shop for everyone who's interested in the primary sources and our Presbyterian heritage, with the goal to not just to let people have access to these works, you know, as a historical reality, but also to benefit from them in our own ministries and our own Christian lives. So on our website, sort of, I guess, a slogan that the past is not dead, primary sources are not inaccessible, American Presbyterians are not irrelevant, or if, to put it more positively, the past is alive, primary sources are accessible, and American Presbyterians have much to teach us today. And so we believe that as we take root in the past, as we ground ourselves in the work of God in the past, we will bear fruit in the present and into the future. And so I guess some inspirations for me in starting this were, like I said, PRDL, and then also obviously Banner of Truth, Sprinkle, Solid Ground, just folks who have reprinted our American Presbyterian fathers in the faith, and I wanted to continue to do that.
You mentioned that part of the inspiration of the work is from these other publishers who are already doing some of this, what we call it, retrieval work. In your words and to your mind, what is the great importance or imperative of Christians today looking to Christians of the past and retrieving the material that they've produced for our own edification?
Well, I think about the great impact that Banner and Truth in particular has had over the past many decades, bringing back, reclaiming the 16th and 17th century Puritans, and even some of the 18th and 19th century American Presbyterians as well, and what an impact that has had upon the church for good. And so I was a history major at LSU, and I've always enjoyed reading, I've always enjoyed history, and so there is just a historical component. It's amazing. We live in a time when these primary sources are available through archive.org and Google Books and you know, other library scans, and things are being digitized. And so we live in a pretty amazing time when you don't have to go to a library any longer the library is there online. And so there is a value in primary source research, primary source reading, that you're not just reading about these men, but you can read their own writings. And so I guess the historian in me, even if there were no benefit, I just love the fact of being able to collect these primary sources. But there is great benefit. There is great spiritual edification as we read, as we meditate, and not just to see and to learn, positively, but even to see things not to do and not to think. And so we need to learn from the past. We need to recognize that these men, like us, were justified sinners. They were in a lot of ways more godly than we are. And so we have much to learn from them. And so the value of reclaiming, sort of, unburying and reminding ourselves of our past is great. I think about some of what we're trying to do with Long College Press is to gather, the writings, as many as we can find. And so there are a lot of greater lights, we might say, that folks like Banner and others have brought out. But there are a whole lot of lesser lights that aren't as well known, but have written a lot and wrote things that have great value. And so part of what we're doing on the website and the blog is to just alert folks, hey, check this out, read this, don't miss this work. There's some people I've never heard of before until we started this, and I'm sure we'll keep finding it. So we need to learn from the past, and that's one of our goals with Log College Press is to continue to say this is our American Presbyterian heritage, and we need to know it. It's funny, it's ironic, I guess. It seems like sometimes we know the English and Scottish Puritans better than we do our own American Presbyterian fathers in the faith, even though they're not as long ago and certainly not as far away. And so that's one of the joys, is realizing that even around the corner, just a century ago, a century and a half ago, some of these men were ministering in our own backyards.
A thought comes to mind. I recently listened to Carl Truman's lectures that he delivered at Westminster Seminary in California, the Dendelk lectures, named after their second president after his retirement. And Carl, or Dr. Truman, I should say, rather, show him all due respect. Dr. Truman gave his second lecture on problems in seminaries of becoming theologically inbred, so to speak. The only solution he offered, because he said he's speaking as a historian, historians don't offer solutions, they offer analyses, da-da-da-da-da, he's being cheeky about that. But he gave one very good recommendation to seminary students to fight against becoming balkanized and siloed out in your own little theological bubble. And he said, read broadly, read outside of your tradition. I think we can add to that and say that we should read broadly in terms of chronology. C.S. Lewis made this point in his essay. I think it was the essay introducing Athanasius is on the incarnation. It might have been a different essay, but I know he's made the point in various places that the modern man is especially prone to chronological snobbery, where we want the new, the latest, the best. And the work you're doing and the work that Banner of Truth has been doing, that Reformation Heritage Books does, that CCEL and PRDL and Monergism.com and so many other faithful brothers and sisters, Sprinkle Publications, Solid Ground Christian Books, like you said, Clock and Clock Classic Reprints and Soli Deo Gloria Publications in the past, that work is so crucial to allow us to read broadly outside of our time. And I love that image of not just getting outside of your theological party, though that's important, and I commend that and think that's good advice from Dr. Truman, but also reading outside of your time, understanding there's a different perspective, or there's a perspective much more broad or outside of 20th, 21st century, even Reformed theology. And so I really appreciate the work you're doing. Couple things. I want to hear a little bit about the sourcing of the material, and I think that'd be beneficial for our listeners as well. But when you go to logcollegepress.com, everything's conventionally spelled logcollegepress.com, logcollegepress.com, the very first image that captures your mind, it's part of the name, it's part of the little graphic logo, it's part of the background picture on the website, is a big log college. It's a big log cabin, like a two-story log cabin. What is the significance of that? How did you come to this name?
Well, the Log College was one of the earliest, if not the earliest, quote, seminaries. It was in the, you know, the 1720s when William Tennant founded essentially a study center in his house. And it was a precursor to Princeton in some way, not perhaps direct. But and so as I was thinking about, you know, this idea of needing a name, and I tried several names, but I realized, you know, the Log College as a school probably never had a press. And when we think about university presses and college presses, it seemed to fit. But it also pointed back to, in a beautiful way, the history of the Presbyterian Church, and as well the somewhat academic and pastoral emphasis that I was hoping to do with this. I think the writings that we've published are for all believers, but there is a particular emphasis on pastoral ministry and the things that we have actually published, and seminary students. And so it's neat to think about an extension of even our earliest seminary and educational efforts to give those men, you know, though dead, they still speak. And American Presbyterianism has always been committed to educated ministry and to teaching, to preaching. And so one of the ways that that has been manifested is in not just in pulpit work, but in the work of the pen and writing. And so it's a great joy to be able to reclaim and to recover and to collect in one place all of those old PDFs that have now been digitized, whether it's books or articles or journals, newspapers. There's definitely significance to that title. A lot of people will confuse it, call it Log Cabin Press, and which makes sense, I guess, when you see the logo as well. But and that's just an opportunity to talk to folks about our Presbyterian heritage and even sort of the story of American Presbyterianism starting up in there in Pennsylvania. I started this out of a desire to both have one place where all the works that we found online could be housed, and as well as an opportunity to publish, you know, a select handful of things that maybe wouldn't make the cut for a larger publishing house, but on a smaller scale, might still be worthy of reprint. So I hope that we've done that and we'll continue to be able to do that.
I want us to talk about some of those projects, but before we do, I am very curious, how did the press come about? Was this just your idea and you ran with it, or did you have a group of people coming together around a shared vision for retrieving American Presbyterian literature?
I guess some of both. As I said, I was a history major at LSU. I've always enjoyed reading, enjoyed books. I was exposed, you know, to our American Presbyterian tradition in college and seminary. I went to RTS here in Jackson, Mississippi. Men like Bebo Elkin and Ligon Duncan and Duncan Rankin, Andy Hallfecker were my professors and mentors. And actually in 2001, Duncan Rankin took a group of us on a Southern Presbyterian tour there in South Carolina. I met Dr. Nick Wilburn on that trip, in fact. And my first call was in Columbia, Mississippi, 2003 to 2007. And I was reading the life and letters of Benjamin Morgan Palmer. And I noticed as I read that there were several other sketches from a pastor's portfolio in the Southwestern Presbyterian magazine, along with some other articles that he had written. And so I got the microfiche from Montreat. I transcribed them sort of the old fashioned way, you know, there at the library. And Nick actually helped me to get them published with Banner under the title The Selected Writings of Benjamin Morgan Palmer. And so I think that sort of whet my appetite for this primary source material that's, you know, hidden away in archives, hidden away in newspapers. And I also had done some work with Wayne Sparkman at the PCA Historical Center. And there were other ideas of material that I would have loved to have seen, you know, get reprinted, and men that I wanted to see get reprinted, but ideas never really got traction with any publishers. And along the same time, I started working in 2011 on my THM at Puritan Reform Seminary. And I thought I was going to do my thesis on the life and writings of William Swan Plummer, one of my favorite 19th century Presbyterians. And that's not what I ended up doing my thesis on. But as I was thinking about that, I tried to locate as many of his writings as I could from different libraries and online. And I had started a little website to post what I'd found. And so that was sort of, I think, when the idea began to percolate in some conversation with Wayne Sparkman. And it wouldn't be neat if there was sort of one-stop shop for all the extant digital writings that we can find online or in libraries. And then a couple of years ago, my church we started a new website using Squarespace. And I realized this would be perfect for what I was envisioning an American Presbyterian digital library site to look like. And also realized I could use it to sell books. And so it just sort of all came together where, these two desires to reprint some of these older works, but then also to collect and gather, I realized I could kind of do it all in one. And so I started, slowly. This was sort of a side hobby, just something I love to do at night and weekends and on the side. And I was writing a blog and posting on social media, building the website. And all of a sudden, I got contacted by, I think, one of Greenville's either, I don't know if he's a current student, certainly a former student, Zach Dotson, who reached out to me and offered to help me. And so he was helping me. And then he connected me with a man named Andrew Myers, who continues to help as the website manager. He's an amazing historian of American Presbyterianism. He's the one who actually writes now the majority of the Near Daily blog posts, and he's uploaded probably the majority of the works on the site. And the neat thing about Andrew, one neat thing, he is in the Reformed Presbyterian tradition. And so, my specialty, I guess, would have been Northern and Southern Presbyterianism, but he's brought a whole slew of authors from the Reformed Presbyterian tradition and made the site so much richer than it would have been if it was just me. And so right now the two of us are the ones who are uploading everything and finding things, and folks will send us ideas, and along the way we've been able to I've been able to publish a few I guess seven titles, as I said, and so that's been fun as well. I've learned a ton about a lot of things.
Zach is still a student here at Greenville Seminary, and he, like Andrew, is in the RPCNA. And if you want to learn about any obscure figure in American or Reformed history, Zach's your man. I mean, he's happy to oblige your curiosity on that score. Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad you have a team that's working with you, that there are a group of like-minded men who are laboring together to retrieve these important works and to bring them to bear in our lives and in our scholarship. Do you all discriminate at all in terms of what you post? Like, is it just conservative, Bible-believing American Presbyterians, or do you even include more latitudinarian, progressive, new school, liberal new school authors as well? I know there are conservative new school authors from the past too, so I'm not just lumping new school theology in with latitudinarianism. But do you all discriminate at all and try to preserve the very best, or do you just put it all out there and let your readers kind of sort out who's who and who's what?
Yeah, probably more of the latter, because there is a sense in which this is sort of a historical endeavor, and we're archiving the past. And so we just want to gather it all, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, I will say we haven't put any Charles Finney on our site yet. There certainly have been some things that we haven't done, but there are some Cumberland Presbyterians on there. Charles Briggs is on there. I mean, there are some folks that we in an old school tradition would not agree with. Obviously there's Southern Presbyterians who have written, things on race and slavery that we wouldn't agree with today. And yet, that's part of our past, part of our history. And so we're not trying to keep that stuff, some of those skeletons in the closet. We need to be able to read, to the sources, ad fontes, and be able to read for ourselves what they had to say. But I guess there is, in terms of what we blog about, what we, use in the way of an encouragement, and we try to we're definitely coming from an old school perspective, and so, but there is that historical archival purpose to what we're doing there on the website as well.
Shifting gears a little bit, I want to talk about some of the projects that you all have executed. Of course, we have just this treasure trove of over 2,900 titles that are now digitally available from 500 different authors, but you also have some printed works. So let's start with the printed works. What books have you published, and are there any in particular that you want to highlight today?
So we've done 6 booklets and a book, a small book. I guess I'll start with the book. It's, I guess, one of the things I'd want to highlight. Francis James Grimke, who was a pastor in Washington, D.C. for 50 years. He's an African-American, kind of overlapped the turn of from the 19th century into the 20th century. When we think about the fact that we don't know our Presbyterian forefathers very well, we certainly don't know our African-American Presbyterian forefathers very well. This book was, I collected it from a much larger volume entitled Stray Thoughts and Meditations. And the book is entitled Meditations on Preaching, the book that we published, Meditations on Preaching. And it's so encouraging to see a man, 100 years ago, and his thoughts on preaching that are so similar to our own and what he's committed to. So that book, I think, is just a rich blessing. It's sort of a devotional. It's not something you would read necessarily from cover to cover. You would read, just portions of it, even every Lord's Day morning before you preach. So Francis Grimke's Meditations on Preaching is a great blessing. The other, probably my favorite work that we've published is Archibald Alexander's. We've called it Aging in Grace. It was his Letters to the Aged, and he wrote these 5 letters to those who were growing old, and that's all of us. And so that book, I feel, has such a broad reach, way beyond just for Presbyterians. It's for every single Christian, and it hits on a topic that we don't have enough reflection on, even as pastors. And it's a work that I think we didn't. It was included. Archibald Alexander wrote this, included it in a later edition of his book on the religious experiences. And so it was sort of a gem to find, and because it's so rich, I'm really thankful that we were able to publish that. And we've done some others, just one that the Greenville Seminary Theology Conference gave away, Samuel Miller's Introduction to the Synod of Dort. Another one that's been very popular by Cornelius Washington Grafton, who was a pastor for 61 years in a small country church here in Mississippi. After his 43rd year, he was elected moderator of the General Assembly, and this booklet that we reprinted was his moderator's address. And so for anyone ministering in a small church or a small town, Grafton's words are richly encouraging. And then another one that folks have appreciated is Thomas Dwight Witherspoon, his 5 Points of Presbyterianism, which was an address that he gave in Kentucky. But we've published it standalone with thanks to Wayne Sparkman, who had actually already digitized it online. And it's a great, succinct summary of what we believe as Presbyterians and the beauty of Presbyterianism. So, and a couple others on pastoral ministry in general. But those are some of the ones that I want to highlight that I'm thankful that we still, have for sale and that folks can get and be blessed by.
I want to point something out as you just talk about the published works that you guys have put out there. None of these are going to be bestsellers. Think about the topics. You have a booklet on preaching, meditations on preaching, a devotional work on preaching, not a technical manual. You have a book containing an address of reminiscing on an extremely long tenure in a country church in one place. You have another book on the distinctives of Presbyterianism as the biblical form of church government, and then you have a historical introduction to the Synod of Dort. These would probably rank as four of the least popular subjects of modern, even reformed literature in recent years. And what does that tell us, again, about reading outside of ourselves, reading outside of our time? It tells us that when we are connected to the historical church, we are connected to a range of interests that are wholly unlike our own by our natural proclivities, right? And so it is so valuable to dig into what these men talked about, because they are going to be concerned with things that, quite frankly, we were not concerned with, at least not on our own, not in general. I remember picking up Francis Grimke's address, I think at the turn of the century, it was right before the First World War. And it's most of it's a political speech that he actually gives, I think, in a church setting, in either a worship service or some kind of other corporate gathering. And it's totally different than anything that I would expect to read coming out of a Presbyterian pulpit, but it's not altogether inappropriate in many of the things that he's critiquing the government on in terms of their involvement in World War I or lack thereof. And I think I read it on Log College Press, and it was just very interesting. So reading outside of our time and reading authors we wouldn't naturally or just in a happenstance way come across is really valuable, because we learn about some of their interests, even if we don't share them, even if we're not as concerned with them. Now, in the case of preaching, labors in a rural church, Presbyterianism, and historical watershed moments like the Synod of Dort, I hope we're interested in those things. And I hope reading this material would make us interested in it. That was part of the motivation for Greenville Seminary to commission the work of republishing Samuel Miller's introduction to the Synod of Dort, which Log College Press did a fantastic job curating for us with a wonderful introduction from Harrison Perkins and endorsements from friends of the seminary and colleagues at other schools. And we were thrilled to give that away to our 360 or so attendees who registered for our conference and came through. So who knows what we'll commission for next year. So make sure you put on your calendar March 10th through 12th, the Greenville Seminary Spring Conference. It will be on the church. And who knows, we might give away another commission work from Log College Press. So surely you'll want to be there, and surely you'll want to get your hands on whatever material we can include in the attendee bags. Anyway, there's my plug. Caleb, when you tell us that there are over 2,900 titles from over 500 authors available on the website, the first question that comes to mind is, who is the most prolific author on the Log College Press? Whose name will we see again and again and again as we browse through your digital archives?
We just crossed 100 works by Samuel Miller. So he would certainly be one of the most prolific. Other than Samuel Miller, the other probably most prolific authors would have been William Swan Plummer, William Sprague, a man named Henry Jackson Van Dyke, another gentleman, I want to say his last name was Russell. The site's so big that I don't even know everything that's on it. and obviously, I haven't read everything on the site. It certainly is proof positive. Ecclesiastes 12:12 of the writing of many books. The writing of many books is endless. And so there are so many things out there that we are finding, that we're discovering, and there's more, you know, every day. I mean, this could be a full-time job. Obviously, we're just doing it on the side, having fun. But it's amazing all the things that have been published in American Presbyterian history that have been forgotten. And it's humbling, because it makes you realize that things that are published today will be forgotten. And yet, given the beauty of technology and God's providence and all the great gifts that he's given us technologically, we're able to access those things, you know, with the click of a button. So it's a great time to be alive.
You know, I'm just scrolling through the page here containing dissertations and papers, and some of these are just fascinating. Some of them I recognize, like I see Dr. Barry Waugh's dissertation on here. We have that in our library, and Dr. Waugh lives locally here. I've spoken to him about his dissertation. and on a sentence in the Westminster Confession of Faith, chapter 24, section 4. And then, you know, I see Travis Fentiman's work here on Girardot and Doctrine of Adoption. I see Alan Strange's work here on the Doctrine of the Spirituality of the Church from Mid-America Reformed Seminary's journal, and a bunch of papers, dissertations, and theses from even secular universities on Southern Presbyterianism and the development of American Presbyterianism, generally speaking. And I mean, this is really important stuff for getting grounding in the secondary literature surrounding a very important part of American Presbyterian history. And I was describing it the other day. In the 19th century, American Presbyterianism was the theological driving force of American Christianity in many ways, in a way that it no longer is. Certainly,
that's right.
American Presbyterians have a disproportionate influence in American Christianity. Certainly, we have a disproportionate representation in American Christian scholarship, but it's not like it once was. And these guys were really operating at a time when American Presbyterianism was at the apex of American Christian intellectual thought.
As well as operating at a time when there was no internet, very few distractions. And so that's part of why their works are so rich and so thoughtful. But you mentioned the secondary material, and that's one of the things that we'd love to see grow on the site. We have a secondary source bookstore where we're trying to find all the things that have been published and just put links to Amazon with those. But then you mentioned the dissertation page and the thesis page. It's a little bit harder to get access to those documents because of copyright issues. Obviously, the old books, you know, are all out of copyright. They're all in the public domain, so it's no problem to put those on the site. But I'd love to have as many as of those journal articles or theses or dissertations that have been written on Presbyterianism so that researchers and students of the period can go and can have access to those works. As well, that reminds me, one of the things that we've just started recently, you'll see on the website, is called Log College Review, sort of a nod to the Princeton Review and the Southern Presbyterian Review. I'd love to have folks who have a desire to write, you know, sort of short form scholarship, you know, 500 to 2,000 words on some Presbyterian historical topic or biography or theological issue or a book review. You know, we welcome anyone who'd like to send me a submission, can do that. And we've published several, you know, just folks who have an interest in this period, but maybe don't want to write an article long enough to get published in a major journal, or maybe they know that they never could get published in a major journal, but they still have an interest in writing on this topic. We'd love to sort of be a platform, you know, for even some original, you know, scholarship in this area. And so who knows? That's kind of just been something that we started. It's moved slowly, but it's been fun to see some of the submissions that have come in, and I'd love to see those only increase.
Yeah, these are really valuable, and the word count's not too high, so you could even dip in to this section of the website and, you know, read a few hundred words and really come away having learned something that almost surely you didn't know before. I'm looking right now at an article posted just a few weeks ago, about a month ago, February 23rd, from my friend Chris Hutchinson, who's a senior pastor of Grace Presbyterian Church in Blacksburg, Virginia. And he wrote an article on R.L. Dabney on the attractions of popery and applying it, applying Dabney's critiques of the church in his day to some of the abuses and misuses of worship in our own day. And I think that's a really incisive correspondence to draw and a helpful relation to make as far as we are concerned with reforming the worship of our church according to the Word of God. And so, you know, I commend logcollegepress.com to our listeners. I can't commend it heartily enough. And if you want a taste of American Presbyterian history in the flesh, so to speak, or in the brick and mortar, I guess would be more appropriate, then I want to remind our listeners, they've heard me plug this offering from the seminary pretty much every other podcast episode, I feel like I'm giving a plug for this, but this one, it's particularly useful and relevant. But each year in January, we have a Presbyterian Church history course taught by none other than Dr. Nick Wilborn, and that includes a tour of Columbia and a tour of Charleston. But this summer, we're actually doing a course that could be called the Log College Press Course. It is Presbyterian Theology in the American 19th Century. And so we'll do the tours of Columbia and Charleston like we do, but all of the lectures, instead of going from Calvin and Knox through Scottish Presbyterianism with Chalmers and the Erskine brothers and the Merrill controversy into American Presbyterianism and tracking pretty much with the main line of American Presbyterianism through to the present, instead we'll be laser focused on American Presbyterian theology in the 1800s and bleeding over a little bit, so let's call it the long 19th century, bleeding over a little bit into the late 1700s and early 1900s. So we'll be looking at some of the men we've named, Palmer, Girardeau, Thornwell, Dabney, but also W.G.T. Shedd in New York and Charles Hodge and all of the Princetonians like Miller and the other Hodge and Alexander. And we'll also be looking at some of the controversies that racked the Southern and Northern churches, like the New School, Old School controversy on boards and agencies in the church, controversy on evolution, and particularly Professor Woodrow's presence in Columbia and the overtures that were made to him from Princeton. Very interesting personal dynamics there. And we'll talk a bit about the development of Old Princeton towards the end of that long 19th century. In any case, if you're interested in that class, it's running from August 5th through 9th this year. And please contact the seminary if you'd like information. You can audit it for just, I think, $60. I think it's a 2-credit class, so you just audit it for $60, and you're responsible for your lodging and your travel and everything else, but it really is well worth the time. And who doesn't want to walk around Columbia and Charleston in the middle of August? I mean, it is like the place to be, people. So we invite you, if you have an interest in Log College Press, I think this would be right up your alley. Thanks for that infomercial, Caleb. I hope that wasn't too much of an interjection into our interview. So we've talked a little bit about what y'all have done and what is on the horizon. What are you working on now that you want to tell our listeners about to kind of whet their appetite and maybe get them salivating a bit for Log College Press work in the future?
Well, assuming I can sell the current inventory to have money to print some more books, some of the ideas on the horizon, Samuel Miller on Presbyterianism would be something I'd love to publish. William Plummer, one of his most original works was written on the impeccability of Christ. It's a great little volume. I'd love to publish Girardeau's Catechism, unless Dr. Wilborn beats me to it. Matthew Anderson, African-American Presbyterian, wrote a book entitled Presbyterianism and the Negro. Very encouraging, just look at his ministry. And then there are other ideas, biography. One of the first African-American Presbyterian, John Gloucester, up in Philadelphia. There are so many inaugural addresses. We published William Swan Plummer's 2 inaugural addresses at Western Seminary and Columbia Seminary. But those inaugural addresses are really neat and valuable. I don't know if they'd all be worthwhile to publish in hard copy. But another idea that I've thought about that would be fun is kind of mining the General Assembly minutes for the pastoral letters. Some of those pastoral letters that are hidden away in the old minutes are rich spiritual food. And so I've thought about something like that. So definitely more ideas than time or money, but it's a fun little hobby to get to play with, and hope it's a blessing to the church.
Thank you, Caleb. I think Log College Press has been a great blessing to the church just in the short time that it's been around, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the Lord will continue to do with it through your labors, through Andrew's labors, Zach's labors, and labors of many others who are now invested time and energy and intellectual thought and capacity into this. into this project, and who knows, I might throw, you know, some words your way and see if they're worth anything at all. And I recommend our listeners. Thanks, brother. I recommend our listeners to do the same. If you have an interest in retrieving some of the richness, the treasure that's in the hills of American Presbyterianism, then please take up and read, or I guess we have to come up with a new phrase because a lot of this is digital. Click through read on logcollegepress.com. And if you find something that's worth writing about, then you know, sit at your computer. You don't have to write a lot, 500 words. And you can make a valuable contribution to brothers and sisters around the world who are looking at this website and who are receiving the emails and benefiting and growing in grace and godliness as a result of the work of these dear brothers. Caleb, thank you for your time. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing you at PCA General Assembly, if not before, brother.
Thank you, Zach. I appreciate you letting me share a little about Log College Press, and Greenville Seminary has been a rich encouragement and blessing to the church as well. So I'm thankful for God's work there. And I hope that we can continue to partner together and that the folks that listen to the podcast will definitely take advantage of the free materials there on the website. And if there are any ideas of PDFs that you don't see on the website, we'd love to know about them and to be able to upload them. So, you know, folks can contact me through the website there. My email address is Caleb, C-A-L-E-B, at logcollegepress.com. They can certainly contact me there as well. So I really appreciate you letting me come on your podcast.
Absolutely, brother. Anytime you have something worth saying, you're welcome.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a production of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. For more information about the seminary, please visit www.gpts.edu.